For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning, folks. Less than a month now to the election on November the 5th. Things are obviously heating up across the country. A lot of issues out there. We're going to talk about one of them. Donald Trump has proposed to do away with the Department of Education, and we'll explore that proposition, the upsides, the downsides, with J. Celeste Lay, the professor of the Department of Political Science at Tulane University at 12:30. Nancy Landry, the Louisiana Secretary of State, joins us about this upcoming election. She has been working her way across the state since the end of the legislative session, visiting with local clerks and registrars, warehouse staff to discuss the new laws affecting an elections. Will things appear differently to you when you go to your precincts? And we'll talk about that. Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst with Bankrate.com. Some interesting polling results about what people are willing to reveal about themselves. And I think you're going to be surprised that they're more willing to do some things than other things that would probably strike you as a little odd. We have our NOLA Coalition segment, the difference makers in our community, and we have the co-chairs of the NAACP Act, the New Orleans Committee, both Julia Battle and Lynette Bates will join us to talk about the enrichment programs that they are operating. Jeff Nowak joins us, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer at 10:30. That was an ugly game last night, folks. The score was not indicative of the dominance exhibited by the Kansas City Chiefs. It started ugly. It pretty much stayed ugly through the entire game. There were some spots there that where there was some hope, and I kind of felt like maybe we were going to come back, but just it didn't work its way out and stayed up to the bitter end last evening. And unfortunately, we go down, and we got a tough game this weekend, Sunday with Tampa Bay, and then we have a short week. Thursday night, we play Denver Broncos at home as well. We have some challenging moments our way. And then to add insult to injury, we travel to the West Coast after that. So the next three games, tough scenario for the New Orleans Saints, and we'll talk about that. So yesterday we spent some time talking about FEMA as an organization. And I thought it was appropriate and important to talk about it in light of Milton, which reached a Category 5 yesterday. Obviously, it is now diminishing in its power, which is good, as it approaches the Florida coastline. And those folks are now hunkering down, getting ready for that storm. There's been a lot of discussion and folks accusing one another of being political and trying to make this event political, both Hurricane Helene as well as Milton coming our way. And it all started with the secretary to the Department of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, who once again put his foot in his mouth and said to the world, we don't have enough money to be able to deal with the rest of this hurricane season, understanding that Milton is headed this way and it looks like it's going to cause some extensive damage. As we already know, that the preliminary estimates of Hurricane Helene could reach $47.5 billion in devastation. 232 or so, they may be even more by now, have lost their lives in this event as well. What's interesting, though, is we talked about how the Biden-Harris administration has taxed FEMA with doing a lot more than disaster relief, which is its primary mission. And because of that, we talked about my thoughts on that as it relates from an organizational structure, that they're really not designed to take on more. They struggle a lot with just fulfilling their primary mission. And as I said yesterday, it's not a criticism, it's a reality. We have to decide whether or not we want something different. It's clearly evident to me that we do. But who's going to do something about it? Who is going to make that a must organization? We got to talk to a federal coordinator yesterday who texted in, and he said his feelings were the moment that they put it under the Department of Homeland Security, it was not as important a priority for administrations as it was before, because they directly reported to the president. And now we're caught up into the quagmire of the bureaucracy of the Department of Homeland Security. You can reprogram money. You can move things around. You create new sub-agencies, subgroups within there. You fund it. You hide dollars here, there, and everywhere else. And this is not unique to Democrats or Democratic administrations. Republicans do the same. But in the end, again, you and I, taxpayers, consumers, are the ones that end up suffering by the game playing that's going on. Interestingly, though, the IG, who now Democrats want to go about getting fired, has made a number of observations over the past 2 years about the inefficiencies of the Department of Homeland Security and their inability to account for the dollars that are appropriated to them and where they are actually spending those dollars. And you will recall that President Biden says this all the time, show your budget and I'll tell you what you value. In fact, Corinne Jean-Pierre was challenged with that statement by Peter Ducey yesterday at the White House news conference. And they can't seem to get their messaging straight. Well, the Inspector General for DHS just recently reported in August 14th report that as of October of 2022, that FEMA had $8.3 billion in unliquidated funds meant to relieve declared disasters from 2012 or earlier. You heard me talk about this long tail period of closing out these budget years and these monies and everything else as it relates to previous storms. Of that $8.3 billion, $7 billion is not obligated. So that money could be reprogrammed into this snap of a finger. The fact of the matter is, every administration is guilty of this. They like to have their little slush funds. So when something comes up, like what they did down at the southern border, and they want to be able to throw some dollars out to local communities, non-governmental organizations, otherwise known as NGOs, those are heavily laden with human capital, voters, they start dispensing and dispersing those dollars. And it goes on. It's this vicious cycle that we have with our government each and every day. And the fact that we can't even adopt a budget is criminal, quite frankly. We're operating our government by continuing resolution. We are, in many respects, a third world country. We just don't want to admit it. One of the byproducts of our inability to do the right thing, to do the just thing for taxpayers of this country, are these silly games that are revealed over and over and over again. We have a Democrat in the executive branch, so the Republicans are attacking the Democrat for playing these games. When the roles reverse, or if they reverse, Same game is going to be played all over again. And meanwhile, we just have to sit by and watch this three-ring circus go on, because what's going on in D.C. is really not about you and I. It's about them. It's about control. It's about who they can dole all this money out to. And meanwhile, we just keep paying taxes, paying taxes, paying taxes, feeding this monster. They've got the debt in this country going up each and every day. And these little anecdotal tidbits are released, and no one can put them in their proper context. And that's why I decided to talk about it again today. Because here we are, we've got billions laying around, and we're poor-mouthing to Congress, and now we're trying to force Congress to come back into session, which, by the way, is going to cost you, the taxpayer, more money, to appropriate dollars that they already have available to them, but they don't want to touch them. That's our secret little slush fund. Nobody is supposed to know about that. In fact, you, the IG that revealed that to the public, shame on you. Now we think you should be fired. This is absolutely incredulous, what's going on here. There's been some other observations about other funds that are available as well that can ultimately be replaced when Congress, you know, goes back into session, that they can hit. So, for example, one of them is the planned disaster relief funding. There's $3.9 billion sitting there for COVID-19 relief funding to state and local governments. We're still funding COVID-19 relief? How much longer? What are we doing with these dollars? What are we funding relative to that? We're not going to move the needle in a measurable way by spending all of these dollars. It's absolutely crazy. There's another little fund out there that's got another $1.4 billion that's sitting there that could be reprogrammed as well. Those are dollars, obvious, that are dedicated to illegal migrants that are coming to this country, and we're putting them up in hotels and flying them all over the country and everything else. Let's reprogram those dollars. Let's shut that program down. Let's talk about this citizen advantage, that the citizen comes first. Nobody wants to talk about that. Another little slush fund. Why? This is what makes members of Congress powerful, is their ability to come down here, fly down, have a press conference, talk about the dollars that are being sent out there. I'm just as guilty as the rest of talking about that. Oh, how great it is, this, that, and everything else. But the truth be told, there's really not a lot of accountability in how these dollars are spent and what the priorities are. We're just all over the map. But in our time of need, when we are down and out, and we actually need that monetary, financial, and the powerful oomph of the federal government, we should not be vacillating as to how this is ultimately going to get funded. And the role that the federal government's going to play in the rebuild of these four states that have been significantly impacted, and there's more states than that, but four that more so than others, is really the infrastructure issues, more so than anything else, where the states are going to need assistance in order to rebuild those roads, rebuild those bridges, and everything else along there, so that we can eliminate the isolation that's been created as a result of this storm. And as Milton heads towards Florida, it's going to be even more, and it could potentially be worse. That is yet to be determined. But again, we should not be finger-pointing. We are all guilty of doing this. We are not taking this very seriously. and how our priority is that we have no limit on what we would be willing to spend to those that come to this country in violation of our laws and violate the sanctity of our country. But when it comes to a citizen, a taxpayer, that we spend a lot of time making sure that we place a ceiling on what we would be willing to spend in order to save them. Does that sound right to you? It just doesn't sound right to me. And I know that those are, you know, going to say, oh, you know, he's xenophobic, he's this, he's that, he's everything else. It just doesn't feel right. Does it? That the sacrifices that are made by us for decades, that there's these limitations that are put over and over and over again, but on a whim of a president. And this applies to all presidents. This is not just about Democrats. On the whim of a president, that can all change. For whatever ideological bent they are and whatever the pet project may be or otherwise, to the detriment of you and me and others. It just doesn't sound right to me. You know, it was interesting earlier, and someone texted in about the interview that Tommy Tucker did with Meg Faris about this experience that she had of going out to this gentleman's home who had made a call to help and try and facilitate the needs of a neighbor. And what she found was is that his needs may be greater than probably anybody else's needs in the entire neighborhood. And yet they've just been hit with high hurdles, and he's not able to get over those high hurdles. These are the anecdotal stories, and you're going to hear, trust me when I tell you, thousands upon thousands of them in the aftermath of Helene and the aftermath of the storm that's bearing down on Florida. And I'll ask you, does this sound right? It just doesn't sound right to me. It sounds like our priorities are intrinsically linked to achieving the political outcomes that we desire. And what it feels like is icky, and it feels like that many are willing to sacrifice the needs of the citizens of this country on a whim. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, Newell, how you doing?
Not good, Jeff.
Yeah, that was a rough one, wasn't it?
Let's just jump right into it. I was looking at the stats this morning. That score indicates a lot closer game than what the stats reveal.
Well, I mean, the crazy thing is there was a point in the third quarter, early in the fourth quarter, I can't recall exactly when they scored. Saints were down 3 points. Should have been two points, if not for missed point after. If you get a stop there and you get the ball back with a chance to tie or take the lead, the fact that it was ever in that position is actually kind of remarkable. And, you know, we have Colin Saunders to thank for that. That was it was one of the best moments in a game that you will want to erase immediately from your memory banks as a fan. Just watching that clip every time I watch it is just makes me smile, because just consider that a 320-pound defensive tackle intercepts the ball in the end zone, and his first instinct is, I'm going to run as fast as I can. It was the longest interception return by a defensive tackle in Saints history. I think it was 37 yards. The second longest was Sheldon Rankins. It was 27 yards, I think, in the 2017 season. So that's where I'm going to start. Remember that game for that moment. Don't remember for anything else, because, yeah, you got dominated. Up and down the field. They doubled you in time of possession. They doubled you in yards. They literally doubled you in points. It was 2-1 in every meaningful statistic in that game. And, you know, Pat Mahomes, he's like a self-driving car. It's like, you don't really understand how it works, but he just never hits anything. He just navigates in ways that just don't make a lot of sense. And he always gets exactly where he needs to go, not an inch further, not an inch shorter. There was a 3rd-and-9 play in that game where he dove, the refs blew it short. He didn't even like question it. He was just like, yeah, we're going to challenge that. They're going to overturn it. I know I got exactly where I needed to go. It's just so calculated. And the Saints just were not. They were the exact opposite. Everything seemed like it was 3 yards off of what they needed it to be. Yeah, that's frustrating. And now you're looking at a 3-game losing streak. I just looked this up this morning. So you've now had a 3-game losing streak in every season of the Dennis Allen era. So we had a 3-game losing streak in 2022, now one in 2023, and one in 2024. If you go back a decade, the Saints have made the playoffs 4 times. In those 4 seasons, you did not have any losing streak of more than 2 games, and that was obviously the 2017 to 2021 stretch where you made the playoffs 4 times. In every other season they missed the playoffs, they had a losing streak of at least 3 games or more. So that's not a good thing. And you could say, hey, at least this one was early in the season. At least you have time to recover. But in every other season they have had a 3-game losing streak, they have missed the playoffs. So you are not in a very good situation right now, to say the least.
No, and then, you know, when you look at the injury picture last evening, it potentially got, and we yet to be determined, but could be way worse, right?
Yes, Derek Carr, you know, he said it happened on the last throw. I assumed it was on the hit. He came out, went to the injury tent after that incompletion of Mason Tipton. It was a 4th down attempt where they sent an all-out blitz. And, you know, it looked like there was a chance to make that catch. It was a tough one. He said it was actually on the throw that he did something to his oblique. You know, he said he tested it out. He was unable to throw effectively, and that's why he didn't go back in. That's obviously a big issue. You're already talking about a team that doesn't have the entire interior of its offensive line. I guess Lucas Patrick did play through that injury. He left with a, you know, I think there was some concern about his collarbone. He went to get it tested out, but he did come back. You ended up playing Connor McGovern at center, which, you know, you got to give him a lot of credit. He showed up on Thursday, I want to say. Actually, I think it was Friday. I thought he played reasonably well. The one extended drive you had in that game that ended in points, it was Connor at center, and he clearly played well enough that when Lucas came back, they felt like, hey, our best option is to put him at left guard and keep Connor in at center. You know, the other scoring drive was definitely not a pretty drive. You had 3 rushing attempts for 1-0 and 1 yard, and then you ended up with a 45-yard touchdown pass through Sheet to Heat. So not exactly, you know, how you draw up the offense. I guess you can look at that as a positive is, you know, Connor is a veteran who looks like he can step in there and play center at a high level. So hopefully that helped you bounce back. But, you know, this season has been such a weird kind of mirror image of last year in a lot of different ways. You know, for the second straight year, you're looking at hosting the Bucks a week after Derek Carr suffered a kind of vague injury that we're not really sure exactly how it's going to affect him, and you desperately need to win this game at home. If you don't, things are going to get ugly really fast. You're 2-3 now. You got a short week coming up after this game on Sunday. against Sean Payton's Broncos, who are going to try to tee off on the quarterback. They have a great pass rush there too, great secondary. It's not looking pretty. There's already been a firing in the NFL. This is one of the earliest I can recall, 5 weeks into the season. Robert Saleh of the Jets. He must have just got off the plane from London, and the Jets decided to make a coaching change. So it's definitely not a comfortable time on airline, I would imagine.
Yeah, there was a lot of criticism. I was reading, some of the comments last night and about, they abandoned the play-action pass. But it seemed to me Kansas City's defense was just, they were coming on almost every play. they weren't going to be moved by play-action one bit whatsoever, right?
Yeah, I mean, you only ran 51 plays in that game compared to the Chiefs' 80. So there's a lot of things you probably wanted to do that you just never got to. Because you can't really – it's tough to run play action if you don't get a first down, right?
Right.
Your first play of a drive is typically not going to be play action. You set that up, and then you hit it. They did take some – they did go for some shot plays. That was part of the game plan. I think, when you look at it, the grand scheme of it, the number of shot plays relative to the number of passing attempts in general, which was 28, is actually a high percentage. So you were trying to get the ball down the field. Problem is you got 26 yards on 11 carries for Alvin Kamara, right? You can't average 2.4 yards per attempt and expect anyone to honor your play action. Like your run threat was not a threat. You ran for 46 yards in that game. That was always going to be the recipe for this season, is you got to establish the run. You hit him with some play action, you hit him with some bootleg, you get everything moving one way, you go the other way. That was how they got their touchdown to Foster Moreau. It was kind of a misdirection. Where you got the defense flowing one way, you worked back and you found Foster in the end zone. It's tough when you're playing from behind and you don't feel like you can pass protect. My big question was how you got to find ways to get the ball to Chris Olave. Like, you have a star wide receiver, you find ways to get him the ball. There's no scenario where two catches for 10 yards on four targets should be happening. And there were some situations. There was one long pass play to Chris that got negated by, a couple penalties, and that would have been a nice gain. There was a couple plays that you were trying to get him the ball, but it got blown up. Chris Jones, it was like they were triple teaming him all night, and he was still winning. It's tough to look at that game and say, well, they should have done this, they should have done this. Nothing was working. And again, that's why the fact that it was a 3-point game in the second half is just kind of remarkable.
Interestingly, Kareem Hunt runs 27 carries, 102 yards. Mahomes, in some of these games, I think has been the leading rusher, if my memory serves me correct. He had 22 yards, which is kind of unusual because he's usually up in the 40, 50-yard range. And it seemed like we just didn't have an answer for their running game.
They didn't have an answer for a lot. I mean, let's just be real. I mean, Mahomes went 28 of 39, 331 yards. It just seemed like they were toying with them at times. That 50-yard pass to Juju Smith-Schuster when you needed a stop was kind of brutal. But, no, I think their inability to stop the run has been one of my bigger concerns to this point. Because, Kareem Hunt is not at a point in his career where you should feel like, he's going over 100 yards. He only averaged 3.8 yards a carry, but they were hard yards. It felt like they were running for 4 or 5 yards on first down. They were able to do all the things the Saints weren't, right? They were able to generate positive yards on first down. They were able to, run the ball for first downs, right? When you go back and look at that game, just look at how many times the Saints were in 3rd and 6 or longer versus the Chiefs in 3rd and 3 or shorter. And, when you can run for first downs and you feel like that's going to work for you, it's going to be a long day for the defense. There was a drive in this game that the Chiefs had 2nd and 34 and got a first down. Think about that. That's crazy. It was just not your day. And, this game really reminded me of the Rams game last year. It's this national television game where I felt like the Saints just got outcoached. It didn't look like they were ready to play. It was ugly.
From your perspective on the sideline, it just seemed to me we were always in the wrong place. And it was kind of weird. It just seemed like, well, where's the coverage here? And it was like once the guy received the ball over the middle on the left side of the field, I forgot which way they were going, but there was like not a single defender on that side of the field. It's like, where is everybody? You know, so like, you know, it just seemed like they were always in the wrong place.
Yeah, well, I think not having Pete Werner was a factor. You know, I think they were kind of targeting Anthony Orgy a little bit, and I don't know if he handled it particularly well. Pat Mahomes also has a way of making you look real stupid on defense. Like, it's just what he does.
Yeah.
He's able to extend plays so long beyond the point where you can expect your defensive backs to cover. I mean, if you're trying to send extra pressure, you're trying to get him off the spot, but you're sitting in zone, and if you're sitting in zone and that guy's just bouncing around and extending the play, he's going to find somebody eventually. That's what the Chiefs do better than anybody. There was one point it seemed like, you know, like Pat Mahomes kind of hit like the B button in Madden. He just did a spin just to do a spin. It was strange. It worked. It's like everything he does, again, it's like he's like a self-driving car. It's like, I don't know how he's able to do it, but he's just always able to navigate. And what makes him so effective is not only is he able to extend the play, there's a lot of really athletic guys that can extend plays and make defenses scramble. What Pat is able to do is he's able to scramble and extend, but he can always throw. He is never off platform. So when he sees somebody breaking open, doesn't matter where they are, he can get them the ball. And that's what makes it so frustrating. Because, you know, you got him kind of frazzled, you got him on the run, and all of a sudden, yeah, it's a 30-yard, 40-yard gain. It's got to be infuriating to play against. It's definitely infuriating to watch, but that's what makes him great.
There was one time that he ran left. He took two steps forward, then reversed and went backwards. And it was though the defender didn't even know what was happening. And, I mean, I can only imagine how frustrating that is. And then he ran – ultimately ran left and ran right around him and then throws the ball down the field. You know, it's like, okay. I mean, they successfully boxed him in. He went right, went left, went forward, came back. You know, I mean, it was just
– it's crazy. Seemed like and I wouldn't even call him the best athlete in the world. Like, he's not in Lamar Jackson. He's just he's just always balanced and always able to throw. He put on, I would say that was one of his better kind of footwork games last night, for sure.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, it seems as though they had, the Chiefs had something to prove. They went about a game plan that really made sense against the Saints. And I think our injuries really revealed themselves last evening. I don't know what your thought, you mentioned that briefly earlier, but I think that it really came to the forefront that without our full complement of folks, We are definitely, you're always a little bit less than, but it seems like it was more so last evening than what we've seen in the past.
Yeah, particularly on offense and in the pass protection. Like, that's just, it's become very clear with this team, and I think that was, you know, we knew that going in. If you can't run the ball, this offense is going to have a really hard time. We saw it against the Eagles. We saw it again last night. You know, if you cannot generate positive yards on first and second down, you're just not going to have success on offense. It is really that simple. You've got to find a way to do it. I thought they ran the ball a little better as the game went on. You still didn't find anyone beyond Alvin Kamara to have much of an impact. Jamal Williams had two carries. One of them went for 9 yards. So that's got to be, you know, this week I've got to find a way to generate a running game. Got to find a way to get Alvin Kamara the ball in space and let him go to work. And if you can do that, I think you have a chance. If you can't, it's going to be a long season.
No doubt, at 46 yards rushing, that's not a whole lot for sure. Jeff Nowak, as always, truly appreciate your observations. WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. Big game this Sunday against the Tampa Bay Bucks, and we'll talk to you again next week. Thank you, Jeff.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
All righty. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. So we talked earlier about this situation with FEMA and Dion Criswell, who is FEMA administrator, is saying that it's the worst that she's ever seen. This is disinformation chaos. She's blaming it on Republicans, of course. You heard what I talked about earlier. Why not just go out there and just tell the truth as to what's actually happening? Instead of trying to politicize this, one side says that everyone's trying to politicize it. The other side responds by trying to politicize it. If everything is copacetic and hunky-dory, then give us the examples of what's actually happening out there. Because the anecdotal stories that are being provided by the victims don't align with what Dion Criswell is saying. And that will continue to be a problem until you go to the podium and you say exactly where you are and why you are. She's making the claim that survivors are not seeking help because of what they're hearing. Really? You have survivors that can't communicate with anybody, that are stuck in their homes. We watched interview after interview after interview yesterday by all the major news agencies flying helicopters and taking special vehicles into areas that you can't get to because all the roads are washed out and otherwise. These people are not trying to get assistance. They're trying to get assistance. They don't have an internet connection. They don't have cell phone service. They don't have television. They don't have utilities. So who's being dissuaded? Stop going and trying to make something out of this that it's not. These people are not being dissuaded. They want help. They're just not getting it in many cases. So be honest about the challenge before you and set the expectations appropriately as to what you can deliver and what you cannot deliver. Plain and simple. And you'll be better served in the end. There are certain things and expectations that are out there that you're just not able to meet. You don't have to apologize for it. That's the reality of any response, of any relief effort that goes on, no matter if it's in the United States or otherwise. So just be honest about it. You are not going to be, nor will you ever, be all things to all people as it relates to the victims looking for relief. And the sooner that you set the record straight as to what it is that you're willing and able to do and not able to do, the better off you're going to be. But you're wasting time, like all others, sitting there blaming this one, that one, or otherwise. And it's interesting. I would love to have this conversation with Dion Criswell and others to see whether or not there's been a financial roundtable discussion about what pockets of dollars they actually have access to that they could reprogram in the short term and resolve all these issues. And let's start by being honest about that as well. And then maybe you can put a lot of this to rest in the short term and stop playing the silly games. And I'll say this again. This is not about a Democratic administration. This goes on all the time. Just set the record straight. No one can tell your story better than you. And if you can't tell the story, then you are not a credible leader. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We'll be right back. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with the co-chairs of the NAACP Act, Julia Battle and Lynette Bates.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.